I'm getting excited about tonight. I'm feeling so good.
Welcome. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, fellow slaves of the global plantation, and hermaphrodites. The Vinnie Eastwood show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists. Is Vinnie's jokes. The question today is, are you new to this? Are you new to the truth? What is the truth? I remember one time somebody said, Vinnie, you don't know the one truth. And I was like, okay, well, let's go find out. Did an internet search for the one truth. It came up with all these religious websites of all these people claiming to know the one truth and just disagreed about what that truth was. So, let's pretend that you grew up in a Western society, that you went to public school, that you consumed the media through the television, that you use social media, that you've become somewhat educated and you've done some work in the world, working for companies and so on and so forth. How would you stumble across the truth? First of all, what are you? Are you a free thinking individual? Or is it more likely that you're the member of a cult? Do you live in a country that has some form of culture? Where do you think we get the name? When you went to school, did they make you get up early so that you're sleep deprived? Did they teach you mindless, repetitive things that dulled your senses? Did the school have a central authority figure that you had to obey? Did you get ostracized by the people around you if you questioned that central doctrine and didn't play by their rules? Was there a lack of nutritious food available? Was there fluorescent lighting that's not too bright and not too dark? Was there a prize dangled in front of you that if only you did this and if only you did that, eventually you'd get that little prize? If you've been to school, if you've been to a job, if you've been to university, or any kind of cult, they use virtually identically the same techniques. This is to destroy your mind, destroy your creativity, your ability to question the things that are being told to you. David Icke once put a slide up when he was here in New Zealand in, I believe, 2014, of the effect on creativity, independent thought, and all these things that you really associate with childhood. And it basically stripped all those things away. So when people tell you to grow up, what they're really telling you to do is to lose your inner child, your creativity, your curiosity, and your independent thought. Those techniques are tried, true, and tested, and have been used for a very long time. So now, if you recognize these techniques and what they have done to you, recognize that you're a member of a cult. Members of cults lose a portion of themselves, as their family members will attest when these people get out of these so-called institutions. They're never the same again. So whoever you were before you went to school, before you got a job, before you went to university, that's not who you are now. and something's been taken from you. That's inherently traumatic. When people deal with trauma, it puts these little monkeys on your back and these burdens that you have to carry around with you constantly. Oh my goodness, I'm a member of a cult. Oh my goodness, my government has brainwashed me. These are scary things for the uninitiated, and you must learn to deal with the fact. How do you do that, is the question. I've coined this term post-truth traumatic stress, PTTS. After you learn the truth of who you are and how you got to be here and who's really running the show, it is inherently traumatic. Because who you were was a fiction, and now you are losing that person. That person is dying. Part of you is dying. And in so doing, you are back to zero, like you're 0 years old, like you have to learn to eat, crawl, sit up by yourself. These are not easy challenges, and they are not for the faint of heart. People wake up to things and they start trying to do something about it before they actually really know what they're dealing with. They say that the most important thing for success in politics is naivete and enthusiasm. If you don't know what you're dealing with, but you really want to do something about it anyway, that's what's going to give you the best chance at victory, they say. Now, when you look at truth movement, truth media people, and the lesser freedom media, freedom movement people, believe me, there's a difference. They don't know what they're dealing with, ostensibly. So let's say you're in a cult and you don't know how to think for yourself. How do you get out of this? Firstly, it's about the work that you do. Nobody can chew your food for you and swallow it for you. Nobody can process that food in your gut, and nobody can go to the bathroom for you. And the same is true with the things that go into your mind and the things that you think. You are the one who has to do it. Now, how do you determine a fact? If you look at a box, it has six sides: top, down, left, right, front, back. That's how you know that you're looking at a three-dimensional object. It's a fact because it has that many sides. How do you know if you're looking at a fact, though? Same again, it has six sides: who, what, when, where, why, and how. These are the tools in the trivium methodology, which used to be taught to children so that they could understand fact from fiction in this world. Public schooling got away with that because if their students knew fact from fiction, they probably wouldn't listen to their teachers or be quite as obedient. After you have discovered what it is you want to do in your life, what are your talents? What are your unfair advantages? What can you do better than anybody else? Real easy for you. And what do you actually enjoy doing? And moreover, can you A, make money? Can you make a living at doing that? And by make a living, are you just able to survive by doing what you love and doing what you know to be right? And secondly, precisely how do you go about that step-by-step process sort of thing? You have the ability to determine facts now, but you have to do it about everything, because you've been lied to about everything, virtually. And if you're capable of finding amidst all this chaos around you something that's really true for you, something you really want to do, nothing can really stop you except you. many people who listen to broadcasts in the truth media, often those who are big fans, who listen all the time, do so because it provides a form of catharsis, a lessening of the pain of being alone, of not doing nothing, right? What's problematic about this is your creative flair is not necessarily being lit and gouting flame whilst you're consuming other people's content. The point of a show like mine, for instance, if you know what you're dealing with and all of that kind of thing, but occasionally it gets a bit much for you, that's when you come to a show like this, give you a little bit of a pickup so that you can continue going and doing it. It doesn't necessarily require you to listen all the time unless you know nothing to begin with and you need something that is not stressful to listen to, that enables you to process and download significant information that you'd been previously unaware of. This show's incredibly good for that, and because of the wide array of guests and subjects discussed on it, you will begin to develop what I would consider a geometric uptick in the amount of knowledge that you possess. But with knowledge that you've gotten, regardless of whether you've asked the who, what, when, where, how, and why, you will forget things. That's why repetition, that cult indoctrination technique, is absolutely important in the truth media. Can you quote things? Famous sayings or statistical data and things of that nature? Have you committed them to memory? Because you'll be argued with by people who don't know what they're talking about regularly. And if you're unable to recall the facts, if they ask who, what, when, where, how, and why about a factoid that you're telling them about, say, fluoride or climate change or vaccines, if you can't recall the data because you haven't repeated it enough to yourself to recall it just like that, it will give them the impression that you don't know what you're talking about. And that's because you don't know what you're talking about. You've seen a YouTube video. You've listened to a show only once about this topic, and it excites you so much that you want to hurriedly go around telling everybody about it before you've had the opportunity to process, think about, and verify this information to yourself, because you trust and believe that the people telling you this information are not wrong or lying to you. It's not a very good move. That being said, finding out the facts is not the point of your life. Okay? That's simply the first stage of the trivium. The second stage is that processing. Again, if you know what you know, and know it so well that if people ask those questions, you can rattle off the answers, you are finished learning, per se, in terms of that phase. You'll still learn things and what have you, but now you actually have a concrete base of facts by which to navigate your life and to converse with those around you. The final stage of this, once you have developed that sense of self, that base of knowledge, is to teach what you know to others. That's everybody's job in life. Learn, figure out what you've learned, and then teach. What normally happens when you're in the truth movement, or at least in my case, is before you actually have that full base, you will go out there and try to interview people who have pieces of the puzzle that you do not. And many people make the mistake that these people are coming on your show to listen to you. And that is not the case. They've come there because they've been given the impression that you want to listen to them, that your audience wants to listen to them, and they really enjoy that notion because they're generally speaking, if you're talking about the truth movement, people who don't lie, nobody wants to hear from them, nobody knows their names, and when they open their mouth, it scares people away and they don't want to listen to it. That's why it is so important to give these people the opposite treatment. Be nice to them, learn from them, listen to them, give them some encouragement. Encourage to give courage to others. Just through the course of this broadcast, this will become very clear to those who've been listening to a long time of the wide array of people that we've had on the show, wide array of topics, that many people have told me that they were going to commit suicide, or that they were extremely depressed, or that they didn't know what to do with their life before listening to this broadcast. And these are just the people that have told me, and it's only a handful, and it could potentially be significantly more than that, except I'll never know who those people are, and they'll never tell me these things that I have done for them and their life. The gratitude that they give, they are absolutely so grateful that you have done this work, that you have helped them in some way, even though you did not know who they are, even though you may not ever meet them. They are grateful, and you are doing good work. When you're living in this situation, however, you will become fundamentally aware that you are, for the most part, alone in this. You may start your project with other people because you're kind of afraid of doing it by yourself. And soon or later, you will discover that you are the one with the commitment to the cause, and your friend was just trying to help you out. Eventually, they tire because their heart's not really in it. This is the plague of the entrepreneur. You will fail many times. You may go bankrupt. You may lose everything you got, including your contact with your family and friends, because you'll be too busy trying to make that inspirational thing in your head manifest into reality. Let's say there's a layer of reality right there in front of you that the vast majority of people do not see, but after 10,000 hours of research into hundreds of different subject matters, you now see this reality for what it is. The typical day in the life of a quote-unquote conspiracy theorist. A conspiracy theorist, in my summation, defines a person who believes, absolutely believes, and cannot be convinced otherwise, that there are people in this world who don't care what you think, who do exactly what they want to do. People with power and influence who use their power to maintain and grow that influence. That's a conspiracy theorist. Sounds perfectly rational. The bulk of people, however, are coincidence theorists. People who believe everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as lies, backroom deals, or deception. And that at some point in the middle of the 20th century, the wealthy and powerful and tyrannical and psychopathic ultra-intergenerational wealth families of the world came together in a grand realization. They said to themselves, you know,
I think we've got enough money and power, don't you think, Joe? You know, we've just been too greedy. Let's just let the people be free.
A coincidence, theorist. Sound very insane. Now, we have a caller from Florida who will be getting to just after the break. Chris from Florida, wait on the line there, man. And right after the break, we will go straight to you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're going to go directly to our caller from Florida. I believe his name is Chris. Chris, are you there?
Vinnie, yes. Chris Steiner here. How are you?
You know, borderlining on fabulous. I'd say maybe 1.2 out of 10. It could be worse.
All right. Yeah, I understand. I've been keeping track of your travails on Facebook. I admire what you do, though you're hitting on a lot of points that make me observe that others can't appreciate what you do unless they actually do it, and myself included, being a talk show host. You know, the admiration is wonderful, though you want to inspire people to do the same things, and I encourage folks to take the information on mine, other shows, to call into other talk shows, especially the adversarial ones, and a lot of people are afraid to, of course. The public speaking is such a huge fear. So I think a lot of it is that it's unreasonable people who are afraid they might lose their own self-control. They're the ones who find excuses to not call shows. Even a lot of adrenaline junkies won't dare call a talk show, you know, people who skydive or do other things. Instead, they'll give excuses like, oh, they won't listen to me, they'll cut me off, they'll mischaracterize, misconstrue what I have to say. They'll cast aspersions on me and dismiss me.
Chris, well, I'm so sorry to interrupt.
Fine, as long as you're trying to reach the intelligent audience members Chris, and hopefully persuade them.
May I postulate something here? Because you've touched on something I was thinking about before the show, and I'm glad you reminded me. People do make those excuses, okay? And my answer to that is, yes, you're currently a slave on a global tax system, imaginary money plantation, okay? Yes, that's true, that they will demonize you, that you will lose friends, you will break apart your family, you will lose most of your money, and you will probably suffer some kind of post-traumatic stress. Okay, but that's no excuse to not do it. Okay, what are you, a pussy?
Right on. And it becomes easier once you realize that, and then it makes it a lot easier to regain the wealth much more than is needed to accomplish your inspired goals. And you know, as being a talk show host. Also being a talk show caller, one has to stay reasonable. They have to be ready to speak to persuade as well as listen to be persuaded. But the problem is that so many are afraid that if they are persuaded on air and in public by someone of another persuasion, political persuasion, that their current friends of an opposing of their own persuasion will criticize or disown them, as you mentioned. So what's the big deal with that if you're in search of follow the truth where it finds you? And what do the hosts themselves, when you call up to discredit them, as I often do, what do they have to lose? Well, they often lose their health. Their health often declines because they're not willing to face the demons that are oppressing them. And the guests, likewise, who tell lies, they often won't be invited back or won't be as willing to return if they are going to be called on their BS. And that happens. I mean, okay, so yeah, there might be a slight cost to oneself, but the truth is much more rewarding if you just keep pressing on, and especially when you get others to call into a talk show. You'll find the like-minded friends who'll join with you to call into shows and make points that you didn't get to make, or reinforce the points that you did. And you know, I find also when it comes to either call-in shows or in-person presentations, there usually aren't too many people taking notes. You're talking about research, encouraging people to research. Very few people take notes, if any, and almost no one video records. And you know, I find that you know, maybe after a live presentation, I'll find about 5% of the people who are truly interested, who take notes, who ask questions, or videotape. And, of course, they're the ones who are doing a lot on their own. And they're the ones with whom I can network and work with easily.
On that note,
they're not doing it for ego's sake.
Well, correct. And on that note, during the Occupy Wall Street protests around, what was that, 2012, the 1% became a big term that was thrown around. And recently in a New Zealand election, a party called New Zealand Loyal, who want to abolish federal income taxes equivalent here in New Zealand, are the 1% of the vote that we got. What if there's a good 1%, a powerful 1%, a smart 1%? Us. We'll be right back after the break. If you want to hold on there, Chris in Florida, we'll be right back to continue the call here. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. Call in 512-248-8252 or 1-800-313-9443. This is Republic Broadcasting Network.
I was a sacrificial lamb, all part of the plan. They sacrificed me.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about being incredibly cynical, jaded, and yet continuing to do the work of trying to free the ungrateful masses of humanity. Anyway, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And my very special caller is Chris Steiner, I believe, in Florida, still on the line. Chris, welcome back.
Yes, Vinny, yes, you got it.
Now, yeah. Making a point there about being a talk radio show host and doing all this work, what it costs you and why you actually do it. Can I ask you something? Do you think that trauma is absolutely necessary for somebody to be motivated to do this kind of work? Do you have to see the dark side of humanity before you care enough about it to know how wrong it is and want to dedicate your life and give up most of your so-called previous dreams in order to pursue it?
Oh, no, it's not a loss of dream, pursuing dreams anyway, because you know, people who do listen appreciate and do make use of it in their own personal lives. They do appreciate it. It doesn't matter if someone's calling isn't to speak publicly. That's okay, though there are plenty of people who can do it, who could perfectly or perfectly capable of doing it, and you know, and you know, offering criticism usually isn't accepted unless somebody has paid for it, as in the case of, say, a counselor, psychologist, for instance. Though in the case of a talk host, the same can be said if someone has had to pay a price for mistakes that they no longer want to repeat. And it is a very cost-effective way to deliver information. It's extremely, you know, you get to talk to hundreds or thousands of people at a time, calling into, say, terrestrial broadcast shows, as I did this morning two times. You know, I got to correct the record because the first time I was misconstrued. You know, I got to show that, why did they cut me off in the first place? It's because they're not in pursuit of the truth. You know, I got to make my statement on the first call, and they cut me off as usual, and I called back because they don't want to have the give and take. Although they do that, they allow other callers to have a give and take.
So, you know, just to show that this is what they do, and I'm going to have to make a video of this particular topic, but it's just so you can know what I'm talking about.
Well,
but,
this
a lot of it.
This opposition that we face, and often you'll have this even from other people in the so-called truth movement who don't know the trivium, don't know how to sort out facts and fiction, have maybe watched a couple of videos about MK Ultra or COINTELPRO or something like that, and suddenly they see it everywhere, and they have no cognition of the fact that the people who do MK Ultra type things and COINTELPRO type things are often groomed from children to be able to know how to do it, to know how to understand it, to know how to implement it. You just watched a YouTube video last week, bro, and you didn't even watch it twice, okay? And now you're qualified to point out who's a shill and who's not. This arrogance, right? We don't know how dumb we are sometimes because the complexity of the information projects that we're essentially taking onto our mind haven't been groomed into us from the young age as the evil people who do this kind of thing for a living have been.
Yeah, if something is of value to you, you should watch it at least twice. So I do that with a lot of talk shows, and take notes as well, of course. The problem I see is a middle school mentality with a lot of folks. They're just seeking popularity, doing things for ego, and so not for the sake of furthering the conversation, being polite to people so that you can have a conversation again with them in the future, and show that you are respectful, and that's probably the most persuasive thing, being reasonable and respectful.
Chris, you are so right. You are so right. And I've seen this happen so many times, especially in the truth movement. And people will understand this in the New Zealand truth movement, but I think it applies to the global truth movement as well, is that sooner or later, you realize that your country is not actually that big and that your truth movement is even smaller. So the more crap that you put into it and the more infighting that you participate in, the smaller and smaller and smaller your potential becomes, I believe.
That's right. Yeah. And if you suspect somebody of infighting or doing something inappropriate, or just saying something unreasonable when they're, factual based in a conversation on a talk show, for instance, and ask, well, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Entice conversation. Show you're interested in having the conversation with the person that shows you honor them as a spirit.
You're right, Chris. Sometimes we don't ask somebody what they meant and clarify what they meant before we go off on these tidal wave rants of our own things that we made up in our head.
Yes, and likewise, don't learn to not take offense as so many do, to someone who doesn't instantly accept what you've said. They don't take as granted that they know and will accept what you've just now introduced to them. But instead, ask if you happen to had a chance to check it out. And, another thing is that, calling into shows, folks may not say things in the right order. You learn later. I mean, I've been calling into shows for over 30 years, and I still take notes before I call. It doesn't matter how familiar I am with the topic, just like I called in tonight and reprioritize those notes as I'm speaking or as I'm listening to the guest, allowing them to speak. And often they'll answer the question that I had on my mind that I put in my notes. I can strike that from my notes and then reprioritize my notes. And a lot of people interrupt because they're afraid of forgetting what they're about to say, and that's a memory issue that often comes from toxicity from things like chemtrails and fluoride, no doubt. So we have to be patient with each other.
On that note, I want to back you up because often we communicate with people where we think they should be. We don't communicate them on a level where they actually are, and because we've got that extra expectation, that's what makes us offended or upset or something of that nature. How can you not know this? I can't believe you haven't seen that video. It's just like, man, you've got to relax your expectations. We're all people, and people are all flawed, and we do not have a hive mind where we've all absorbed the exact same information in the exact same environment.
Yeah, and it's a slow process. It's not like the Star Trek episodes where they realize, oh my gosh, there's an old Star Trek episode, I can't remember, I think it's Return of the Archons or one of those ones where they're in a mine, they've been condemned to being miners, and they find out that, well, people are losing their patience because they're exposed to a gas in the mine, and so once they realize that they're being exposed, they assert their will, their spiritual will, and become patient with each other. I wish it would be worked out in just a 60-minute episode like that. But this is an ongoing fight. We have to let our spirit express itself and admire each other for being who they are. I'm sure we can find at least one thing that we can admire in others. Know that we're going to have to deal with them. We can't think that you're going to conquer somebody. You have to persuade them, and rather than saying, you must do this, this must be done, that must be done. Well, yeah, maybe that's true, but there are only certain people who are adept, skilled at doing it, or receptive to doing the certain things. And I do admire what you do, because you're such a good listener.
Thanks, man. I get that a lot. The element that we really have to deal with here as talk radio show hosts, as you mentioned or alluded to earlier, is that in the truth movement, it is very different from being a quote-unquote talk radio host, some kind of shock jock who reads little news headlines or reads out the bumper music at the end of the breaks or something of that nature. If you were to define it as a career, you know, something that somebody would be qualified for, paid for, and do on a 9-to-5 basis, a talk radio show host in the truth movement would be more likened to a grief counselor. What we do is talk about traumatizing things, generally with traumatized people, to a traumatized audience in order to not only understand, but deal with and get past the trauma of the fact that we grew up for such a long time not knowing what the truth was, because we had to go through school, then we had to go through work, and then we had to go through university for some of us, and then we realized after all that the lie that we were told that we didn't like in the first place, that, oh, if you just do this, you'll get that, was all a lie the whole time, and that our life had basically been spent, our prime creative years, our prime working years in the 20s and 30s, gone before we even have some kind of an inkling that something is wrong. And then we have to spend another 10 years or so, sometimes, just figuring out what we didn't know already. And then we can start doing something about it by the time we're 40, 50, 60 years old, when the prime capacity of our life, our fighting age, is behind us. That puts it as a tremendous disadvantage, and that makes it extremely difficult for people to understand that the vast majority of listeners to my show, and I'm a 38-year-old boy, you know, are on average a third older than me, sometimes twice as old as me. And the reason for that is because they remember. They remember what things used to be like. They remember what the food used to taste like when they were kids. They remember that they played with other kids in the street. They remember that they had community meetings. They remember all these things that have since disappeared and largely been forgotten about. And that's the thing about memory. That's why they're trying to kill it, because only those people have enough memory to figure out what they've lost and why it's so important to get it back.
Yeah, memory as well as emotional range is what I feel is the evil is trying to squelch, because, through intuition, I can more fearlessly investigate things that are evil, and at the same time know that they're not a threat, and be uplifted by the spiritual, God-focused companions that are all around us. By 25 years old, our nervous system should be developed. So we see that a lot of our younger people are not as able to cope. So our nervous system can actually continue growing and allowing us to have better insights and energy by doing things like mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms like lion's mane mushroom. And the more I've learned, I know that the more supplements I'm able to find that help me get in touch spiritually. We are omnidimensional beings, so we need to be able to bolster the physical, and that allows the structure, the lattice work for the spirit to want to stay in the body, and recognize what's going on or what has in the past, as you mentioned. What has gone wrong in the past. And, like 9/11, I wonder, well, gee, these children being brought up with a curriculum of what they think happened on 9/11, they're going to accept all the tracking, tracing, databasing, the freedom fondles at airports. And things like that, I'm shocked at. But, in contrast, I've growing up, started becoming aware of these things and 17 years old when I was trying to decide who to vote for. Fortunately, I was online, so I could do a lot of research and did see a lot of the things where we had gone wrong, particularly the money issue, and the laws that transitioned over into victimless crime. Able to try to say, hey, I'm young enough. And, I had a community access show back then, back when I was 19 years old here in Pinellas County, Florida, and I just see that a lot. I'm really so fortunate that allowed me to get my legs for public speaking, not getting worried about it, worried about the backlash. Lastly, I'll just finish up that Star Trek episode was called Cloud Minders. The Return of the Archons had a similar theme where people were toxified and figured it out, and so they used their will to overcome that.
Well, it was about starting off, and people are afraid to mess up. They're afraid to screw up. And this is, I think, the worst mentality that has ever plagued mankind, the fear of failure. The most valuable lessons in life will be those that cost you the most, generally speaking. I recall Mel Gibson, when he first went to Hollywood, he said that he would make deals with people who would fall through or not follow through, and he'd lose significant amount of cash on these screw-ups. And he considered them university fees. Okay? These are the things that you learn. And we give each other a hard time, say like, hey, bro, your audio is overdriven, or man, your green screen is not properly lit, or you didn't listen to your guest enough, or, whatever kind of technical or psychological or sociological ways that you could screw up being a talk radio show host or a truth movement person. I give people infinite breadth to screw up, just so long as they can have the cognition and the maturity to see that, oh, I made a mistake there. Oh, I can improve here. But it doesn't mean that you're bad or you're incompetent or something of that nature. You're learning, okay? Give people a break, everybody. If they're new, they're learning, and hopefully they'll get better. And you need to encourage people to do that.
Yeah, my first community access show wasn't too good, and then I took the advice of my friends, and if you have good friends, they'll tell you, they'll criticize you, and you'll accept it, so if you consider them good friends, and if you're not getting criticism from your friends, maybe they aren't your friends.
Or maybe they're just not listening to your show, and they just kind of support you, rather than the...
Probably the... That's usually the case.
I mean, that's the thing as well. I mean, that's what my mate Jono told me back in the day, is that why listen to my show when he can just talk to me? And, you know, I understand that mentality, right, because there's so many people in the truth movement that I've had on this show, and I don't think I've listened to their broadcast, the bulk of them.
Well, yeah, I do tell friends or neighbors when we're talking about things that, hey, I just did a whole show on that. Look at this. Look at, I have so many things to do. I wish I had the time to talk to you. Please, you know, watch my show. Then we'll have a discussion. And it seems like I'm depriving them of that interpersonal chat. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm too short when I tell them, hey, don't complain to me, call in shows. You know what's going on a lot better than most people do. You've really got a good grasp on, you have a very good grasp on the topic. So really, I think it'd be therapeutic for you to call into somebody else and let yourself be heard rather than letting, you know, than having me agree with you.
Yes, and I remember on that vein, a friend of mine was asking me, Vinny, do you think I should run for local politics? And so I asked him, well, that depends. You a sociopathic scumbag who's going to lie to everybody in order to get them to vote for you and then betray them as soon as you've gotten power? And he goes, no. And I go, well, then run. Oh, my God, run. God. You just, anybody who isn't totally like all the current people that are there would be better than the people who are currently there. That's what I'm saying. And so you can't make things any worse unless you're a worse person than the people you're up against. And I don't think any of us are.
Yeah, I get that. I've been asked to run for office. I just feel like there are so many better things I can do. That politics, we have more power still, at least in this country, the people do, to make things better than waiting for politicians to reform, say, economics. I think it all comes down to economics fundamentally, so people will have the time, the energy, the health to afford better quality food and goods and services, heirloom quality goods and better quality services if people work with community currencies, time banks, barter networks, cooperatives, and swap shops. So that's why I focus on my show on health personally, economically, and ecologically. Those are the focal points. So people will have the time and the health and the mental focus and the patience more so to speak with each other. And if they're dealing with someone in their community, they're more likely to talk on issues other than business, on politics, and then they can maybe run for office.
It's something that G. Edward Griffin told me back in the day, that those without power cannot defend freedom. And he encouraged people with the Freedom Force International models to start running for local government, even chief dog catcher, or any position of, you know, power or influence that you could possibly even contest the election, let alone even have a chance of winning, just because it's important to have the representation within those institutions that tell the truth. It keeps a check and a balance on them. And, you know, there's the anarchic argument that any participation in government or voting or any of those things, it has all these subject consequences, like you can now be blamed or you're now subject to these people's laws because you voted and things of that nature. And those are great theoretically, but they mean absolutely nothing whatsoever in the practical world. This guy is the chief commander of the military. He's got a million guys with guns that can go to your house and take you out because he decided that he wanted to do that thing, okay? And you not participating in the voting process won't suddenly gun down millions of soldiers, will it? Okay? Where the rubber meets the road is force. The force of the voice, okay? People don't understand that concept, that when you are using force, that is your authority. That is what you are standing up with primarily as a first resort, generally speaking. Defensive force is often misunderstood and is called violence, which comes from the Latin valare, to violate, which means somebody is violating your rights. your right to not be raped, not be murdered, not be assaulted, not have your stuff stolen from you, or have your property trespassed on, or tell vicious defamatory lies about you, and so forth. If somebody's doing that, you have every right as a sentient organism to defend yourself. Okay? Defense of self. They want to make everything collectivist and what have you. Well, I'll tell you what, there's nothing less collectivist than running for public office on an anarchic platform where you want to oppose the controllers and the slave masters for the good of mankind.
Yes, yes, and if it ever does come down to physical confrontation, if you have the skills that you've already honed to speak conversationally, persuasively, you're a lot more likely to avoid the physical confrontations. And so many people say, well, I have a gun and I'll be able to defend myself. Or I've even heard one person say, I'll be able to go and take other people's stuff, which is the kind of person who should never own a weapon of any kind. And so, you know, people who are relishing, they say that they relish the idea of physical confrontation. I really don't think so, because they haven't practiced the art of conversation in the first place. That's necessary. If you want to talk your way out of a situation, it's a lot easier than using physical weapons or your fists.
Yep. And what was it that Mark Twain said, it's impossible to convince a man of something if his income depends on him not understanding it. And what we're dealing with here, to a large degree, is people who are trapped in their own prisons that people have told them to build. Build this prison in your mind. Why do I want to do that? It'll keep you safe. Okay, and don't let any of these other prisoners in. Wait, hold on a second. I thought the prison was to keep me safe, not to stop me from interacting with other people. Yeah, but never mind that. Just keep building your own prison in your mind, all right? And that is what we, as a general truth movement, not a freedom movement, you don't get any freedom if you don't got no truth. Mate, Chris, thank you so much for calling in. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Cheers, brother. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com today. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a donation. Go through the PayPal, Kiwi Bank, and Patreon to support the broadcast today. It's very, very difficult to be raising a family and telling the truth and all of these things without your support, so I'm so grateful for those who do. We'll see you again sometime on Republic Broadcasting Network.
What would you-